All right, so let's jump into another deep dive. And today we're tackling an inspector calls.
Ooh, a classic.
Yeah, and a text I know a lot of you guys are probably studying right now and maybe even struggling with a little bit.
Absolutely. It's one that comes up again and again.
Yeah, so hopefully we can help clear up some of that confusion today.
Definitely.
We are going to be zeroing in on the idea of the generational divide and how Priestley uses his characters to get his point across.
Oh, that's a really interesting angle to look at it from.
Yeah, he kind of uses them as like puppets almost
Yeah.
to kind of like, yeah, make a bigger point.
Exactly. It's about thinking about why he chose to portray them in certain
Right,
ways.
not just what happens,
Yeah.
but why.
Exactly.
Okay, so first things first, I think we need to just lay out the historical context here a little
Yeah,
bit.
definitely.
So the play was written in 1945,
Right.
but it was set in 1912.
A very different world.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal, right?
It's huge. 1912, Britain was on the brink of massive change. I mean, think about it. You've got the Titanic sinking that same year.
Right.
The women's suffrage movement is gaining momentum.
Oh, yeah.
There are these rumblings of war brewing across Europe.
And of course, the audience watching this in 1945 have just come out of a massive global conflict.
Exactly. So they're seeing all this play out with that hindsight. And Priestley sets this play right before all of this explodes.
Right.
And that tension, that sense of a world about to change, that feeds directly into how he creates those older generation characters.
So you're saying the Burlings and Gerald, they're like walking representations of that pre-war mindset.
Spot on, especially Mr. Burling. I mean, he's so obsessed with social climbing, and clinging to these very traditional capitalist values. He's all about self-reliance, looking after your own, dismissing any ideas that threaten that established order.
Oh, I remember that line. Something like community and all that nonsense. It's almost like he's allergic to the idea of social responsibility.
And that's deliberate on Priestley's part. It's not an accident.
Yeah.
He's using those words to show us just how deeply ingrained these beliefs were, particularly among the upper classes.
And it's not just what he says, it's his whole attitude. Remember
Yes.
all of his predictions about the future?
Yeah.
All this progress and prosperity.
Oh, yeah, he's very confident.
But Priestley knew that the audience would be thinking, yeah, right, two world wars are just around the corner.
Exactly. They've got that historical context that the characters don't.
So it's like Priestley is using dramatic irony
Yeah.
to kind of poke fun at that pre-war optimism almost.
Absolutely. He wants us to see how blind the older generation were to the problems already present in their society.
To the cracks that are already showing.
Yeah, and Mrs. Burling, she's another fantastic example. She's like a masterclass in using a character to really critique social hypocrisy.
Okay.
She's obsessed with appearances maintaining that family's social standing.
Right.
Remember her reaction when Eva Smith uses the name Mrs.
Yeah,
Burling?
she's horrified.
Yeah. It's not just about the name, though, is it?
No, it's about someone from a lower class daring to associate herself with their prestigious family name.
Exactly. For Mrs. Burling, that social hierarchy is everything.
Yeah.
She just can't imagine stepping outside of her very rigid worldview and trying to understand why someone might be driven to such desperate measures.
Right. She can't see it from another perspective.
No, and remember, she refuses to help Eva because of her rigid beliefs about deserving and undeserving poor. Priestley's making a bigger point here about how those in power often justify their inaction.
So we've got this older generation who represent this very like pre-war stiff upper lip,
Yes.
all about individualism and protecting the status quo.
Yeah.
But then we've got Eric and Sheila.
The younger
They're
generation.
young, but they don't exactly start off all that different from their parents, do they?
Well, that's where this idea of the lost generation comes in.
Okay.
Technically, Eric and Sheila are a bit young in 1912 to fit that label perfectly.
Right, because the lost generation is that generation that came of age during the First World War.
Exactly. They experience that huge societal shift firsthand.
Right.
But Priestley uses Eric and Sheila to show how even those born into privilege can be shaken awake by certain events.
Okay.
And he wants us to compare how they react to the inspector's revelations compared to their parents.
So the inspector's visit almost acts as a catalyst to force them to confront their own part in what happened to Eva Smith.
Yeah, and their reactions couldn't be more different from Mr. and Mrs. Burling.
Oh, absolutely.
While the parents are worried about the social scandal,
Yeah.
Eric and Sheila are horrified by their actions. They're
Right.
starting to question everything they've been taught.
Like when Eric gets so angry with his father about those low wages at the factory.
Oh, yes, that's a powerful moment.
Yeah.
He practically yells at him, "Why shouldn't they try for higher wages? We try for the highest possible prices."
Ooh.
He's directly challenging the capitalist system that his father represents.
So he's not just a spoiled son anymore.
No.
He's like a symbol of this younger generation that's starting to see the flaws in the system.
Exactly.
Okay, so I think that's a good place to pause for now.
All right.
We've got a lot more to unpack about Eric and Sheila and how this generational conflict really explodes in the rest of the play.
Definitely looking forward to diving into that.
But we'll save that for part two.
Sounds good.
All right, so we're back, and we're ready to dig a little deeper into Eric and Sheila.
Yes, the younger Burlings.
Yeah, we left off talking about how they kind of represent this shift in thinking, right? This challenge to that older generation's pre-war mindset.
Mm.
But they're not perfect, are they?
Definitely not. They're still products of that same system, even as they start to question it.
Right. They're complicit.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's unknowingly.
Remember Sheila's jealousy that leads to Eva losing her job at the shop?
Oh, right.
That seems like a small act, but it has huge consequences.
Yeah. And it shows how even when you're young and you don't think you have that much power, you can still really impact other people's lives.
Especially when you have privilege like Sheila does.
And then there's Eric.
Yeah.
His relationship with Eva, it starts from this place of rebellion against his family.
Right. He wants to be different.
But it quickly turns into exploitation.
It does. And Priestley isn't letting the younger generation off the hook here.
Right.
He's showing how they're still shaped by the same forces as their parents, even as they start to question them.
But I guess the difference is they are able to change.
Yes. That's what sets them apart.
There's that really powerful scene after the inspector reveals Eric's role in Eva's pregnancy.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Burling is mostly worried about what people will think.
Right. The family's reputation.
But Eric, he cries out, "The money's not the important thing. It's what happened to the girl and what we all did to her that matters."
That is such a key quote and a real turning point for Eric.
Yeah.
He's rejecting that cold capitalist logic that his father represents.
And he's finally understanding the idea of responsibility.
Yes. He's realizing that his actions have consequences.
And Sheila, she has a similar realization.
Oh, definitely.
She even calls out her parents and says, "You began to learn something, and now you've stopped. You're ready to go on in the same old way."
Oof, that's got to sting.
She sees right through them trying to pretend that nothing happened.
She does. And that's another quote that's worth analyzing closely for your exams.
Yeah.
It gets to the heart of the play's message.
It's like this warning, right?
Yeah.
About being complacent and the dangers of going back to normal after a moment of truth.
Exactly. Real change requires more than just admitting your mistakes.
Right. It means actually changing your values.
Yes. And committing to doing better.
And Priestley really emphasizes this with the ending.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a cliffhanger.
Just when the Burlings think they're in the clear, the phone rings.
Another inspector is on the way.
Chills.
It suggests that this cycle of exploitation and denial, it's not over.
Right. It's going to keep happening.
Unless we make a conscious effort to break it.
And Priestley seems to be saying that that choice lies with the younger generation.
Hmm. They've seen the consequences of their parents' actions.
And they're the ones with the potential to build a better world.
A more just and compassionate one.
It's a really powerful message, especially considering when the play was written.
In the wake of World War II?
Exactly. Priestley had seen the devastation that can happen when societies ignore their problems.
Yeah. So that historical context is so crucial for understanding the play's full impact.
It's not just a family drama. It's a commentary on society as a whole.
And a plea for us to learn from the past.
So how can students use all of this to ace their exam?
It's about focusing on the why. Don't just summarize the plot or describe the characters.
Right.
Analyze how Priestley uses those characters and events to convey his message.
So instead of just saying, "Mr. Burling is a capitalist,"
yeah,
you say, "Mr. Burling's statement, community, and all that nonsense demonstrates his capitalist ideology and his complete disregard for social responsibility."
Exactly. You're using those specific details to support your argument.
And to show that you really understand what Priestley is trying to say.
And don't forget about that cyclical nature of the play, that final phone call.
Mm.
It's a warning that this cycle of ignorance and exploitation can easily repeat itself.
So it's not just a story from the past.
No.
It's a reflection of our present and potentially our future.
And on that note, I have a question for you all to think about.
Okay.
Imagine that the inspector were to visit your school or your community today.
Mm.
What sorts of social responsibilities would he uncover?
Mm.
And what would your reaction be?
That's a really good question.
It's like Priestley is challenging us to examine our own lives.
Yeah.
And think about how we contribute to the world around us.
Are we part of the problem or are we part of the solution?
It's definitely something to consider.
All right, let's pause there for a moment. We'll come back for our final thoughts in just a bit.
That's good.
All right, so we're back and ready to wrap things up with an inspector call.
We've covered a lot.
Yeah, we've talked about the characters, the historical context.
Those juicy quotes.
The all-important quotes, right? Now let's think about how you can use all of this to really ace those exam questions.
It all comes back to understanding that this play is like a carefully constructed argument.
Mm-hmm.
Priestley uses every single element, the characters, the setting, even the pauses in the dialogue,
right,
to challenge the audience's assumptions.
Make them think.
Yeah, and force them to confront these questions of social responsibility.
So it's not enough to just like retell what happens. Like when you're writing about Mr. Burling and his capitalist lectures,
yeah,
don't just summarize them.
You have to explain how they reflect the attitudes of the time.
Okay.
And how Priestley is using him to criticize those attitudes.
So you connect those details back to the play's main ideas.
Exactly. Those big themes of social responsibility and the consequences of ignoring it.
And don't forget those quotes.
Oh, the quotes are your gold.
They're so important.
Examiners love to see those quotes.
It's proof, right?
Yeah. It shows you're not just regurgitating the plot. You're actually engaging with the text.
Like, for example, when Sheila talks about the older generation pretending nothing has happened.
That's a good one.
That quote is perfect for talking about those themes of denial and repeating past mistakes.
Absolutely. And remember, context is key.
Yeah.
Understanding the historical backdrop with the wars on the horizon, social unrest bubbling under the surface.
Right.
All of that adds another layer of depth to your analysis.
It's like saying, hey, I get why Priestley wrote this. It's not just a random story about a family.
Yeah.
It's a commentary on the world.
Exactly. You're showing that you understand the bigger picture.
And that you've thought about why this play still matters today.
And that leads me to one final thought to leave you with.
Hmm.
Imagine the inspector was visiting your family or school today.
Ooh, okay.
What secrets and social responsibilities would he uncover?
That's a tough one.
What would your reaction be? Would you be defensive? Would you try to shift the blame?
It makes you think about your own actions.
It does. It's like Priestley is inviting us to examine our own lives.
And consider how we contribute to the world around us.
Are we part of the problem or are we working towards a solution?
That's a great question to think about.
It is.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive.
I agree.
We hope this has helped you understand. An inspector calls on a deeper level.
And that you feel a bit more confident tackling those exam questions.
Remember, it's not just about memorizing facts and quotes.
It's about engaging with the ideas.
And using them to think critically about the world around you.
And who knows, maybe you'll even be inspired to make a difference yourself.
That's what Priestley would want, I think.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.